We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It was July 2016. Philando Castile had just been shot by police in Minnesota, and his girlfriend, Diamond Reynolds, began streaming live on Facebook.
Stay with me!
The last moments of Castile's life would be seen by millions of people around the world.
Philando!
Activists on the ground decided the mansion would be the main site of their protest. But at the same time, a mysterious group called Don't Shoot began organizing a different protest outside the police department where the officer who had shot Castile worked.
Where did this organization come from?
Being involved here for the last number of years, I know that there is no organization called Don't Shoot, and so I knew that something was off. We got an anonymous tip forwarded to us that stated that their website was registered to some strip mall in Illinois.
But no one at the mall knew about the website. It was a fake address, it was a fake page, it was a fake website. In reality, Don't Shoot was being run from more than 4,000 miles away in St. Petersburg, Russia. The troll group was the Internet Research Agency. It had ties to the Kremlin, a budget in the millions, and a network of thousands of fake American social media accounts. And it only took them a few hours to begin posting about the shooting of Philando Castile.
Jordana and Paul here. Now, that was part of a piece that CNN did. CNN did an investigation into how Russian trolls are continuing to divide us using race and racial inequality problems and racial protests. Joining us on the phone is Misha Grimm. You heard Misha's voice in this piece. She's a leader in the Black Lives Matter movement, and she was interviewed by CNN as part of this piece. Misha, Paul and I welcome you to the show.
Hey, Misha.
Hi there. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
Well,
thank
I'm a little
you.
Disturbed by this report. I couldn't believe it. When I got up this morning, I see CNN and these Russian trolls and Philando Castile. How are Russian trolls or organizations, outside organizations, rogue organizations, affecting Black Lives Matter?
Well, I would say that there are a lot of outside organizations that are affecting more than just Black Lives Matter. What Russia is attempting to do is use social media to create more distrust, more of a rift in American politics as a way to manipulate our own troubles, you know?
Mm-hmm. And is that what you think they were trying to do with you? Because at least the piece explained it, that Black Lives Matter had an organized protest that was happening at the state capitol in St. Paul. And then all of a sudden, this other rogue group said, no, everybody go over to the 4th Precinct in North Minneapolis. And did that affect your protest? Did you have to shift resources then to the 4th Precinct?
Absolutely. Everything that Black Lives Matter does in Minneapolis is strategized. There is a reason for every move that we make. This seemed, it was confusing. It came at a time where we didn't need to plan that kind of action. And in fact, we were purposely, making sure that people had the energy to come out and do these other protests to put pressure on the political scene when we deemed necessary. So when we saw this was happening, we were really confused because all the other organizations that we have partnered with and worked with have always deferred to us around strategy with these types of things. And so to have this just pop up out of nowhere, it made no sense.
Misha, this is Paul. The Russians using tragedies to, turn up the volume on America's divisions and our challenges right now is something that has been going on for several years. What are you doing differently? What is your takeaway? What is your organization doing differently in light of the fact that you did get hacked by these Russian trolls?
I wouldn't say that we actually got hacked. They created a fake account that mimicked some of the things that Black Lives Matter talks about and says, but when you looked at the Facebook page and the event group, it didn't actually add up what was going on there. The language was not language that Black Lives Matter necessarily used.
Right.
It was, there were tons of phrases that were just slightly off. So, we're working diligently to continue to, stay abreast with the different organizations happening, stay abreast with the different issues. And we're lucky in Minnesota to be so connected and have so many different allies that when someone or something pops up like this, we're able to communicate and talk to each other and be like, does anyone know where they come from? Mm-hmm. And if no one knows, well, then we have something on our hands, you know?
Misha, excuse me. I know that you were hearkening back now to the Philando Castile death, but you guys have been very busy this weekend in the shooting death of Thurman Blevins. Do you have any update? What are you hoping now to see? I know there's an outcry for the video, but what are the next steps for Black Lives Matter with this most recent shooting?
I think that there's a lot of different strategies happening in the Twin Cities right now around that. I know that MPD 150 is an organization that has been working to abolish, actually, the police force in Minneapolis. We just saw that scandal with the ketamine and MPD drugging people. So there's a lot of bad press right now for Minneapolis Police Department. And I think it's time for us to revisit the issue on what's going on with them. What kind of checks do we have? How can we hold people more accountable to make sure that things are happening the way that, you know, every citizen envisions the police force responding to their needs?
Do you have faith in Madaria Arredondo? You know, we have the last police chief obviously didn't last necessarily through the last few shootings. Do you have more faith in Chief Arredondo that he will be more transparent?
I think Arredondo has worked really diligently in his many, many years in Minneapolis to cultivate a lot of relationships and to communicate effectively with a lot of different kinds of people. So I am hoping that there is going to be more transparency. I do know that the position that he's in is really, really difficult. Mm-hmm. I'm really hoping that we can get some positive strides in the direction that we need to happen to make sure, like, we don't want to see these killings anymore. And obviously, just a couple days ago, St. Paul police chief asked for 50 more police officers, and Melvin Carter said no. And then the shooting happened maybe a day or two after that story broke. And so we really need to start having these discussions. Why do we think we need more police officers? What is making people feel like having more police officers will make life safer? Because I can guarantee that there's a lot of people that don't believe that that's true.
Misha, is part of the solution technology? Are body cameras a step in the right direction, in your opinion, or not?
I think that we had a really tough fight with body cameras. And I think if body cameras were used as an accountability tool completely and wholly, then, yeah, it would be a good step forward. But unfortunately, the flexibility that we have in the laws with when body cameras can be turned on, who allows body cameras to be turned on, it basically makes the new technology null and void. Unless we can have those consistently on and there's rules, mm-hmm. there's regulations about when we use them, I think we're still going to end up with a lot of situations, even with body cameras, where we're not going to know what happened.
Misha, it's Jordana again. I feel like Black Lives Matter gets a bad PR. They get a lot of bad press. People come at your organization often in a negative light. You have a big microphone here on WCCO. What would you like to tell the people of Minnesota that is the mission of Black Lives Matter?
The mission of Black Lives Matter is very simple. We want our humanity recognized, and we want to go about our day-to-day just like everyone else does. To live in a world where the majority of the population feels safe with uniformed police officers in their community and the other half feel unsafe, it's just not right. And it's time that we really come together and demand justice and see the humanity in everyone. We're in the fight for our lives.
Misha Grimm. Misha is a leader in the Black Lives Matter movement, and we do hope you'll come back on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks, Misha.
Thank you, Misha. And thank you to Jared Goyette, who's our digital manager, who knows Misha and was covering this Blevins shooting all weekend. So he's been very involved in a lot of social action groups around the state. So, Jared, thank you for setting that up for us. It's 5:22.
We should also mention that coming up at 5:35, Congressman Keith Ellison joins us to talk about the Trump travel ban and today's decision by the Supreme Court. You'll want to tune in for that live at 5:35. Before that, though, Susie Jones has a news update.
But before Susie, if you want to chime in, if you're right. listening to Misha chat, we just have a few minutes for calls before the bottom of the hour. So, yeah, 651-989-9226. We hope to shed some light on what Black Lives Matter is doing, how they were involved. The Russians were involved in sort of challenging them on the Philando Castile protests, but also in light of the Blevins incident. We wanted to talk with him about that. 651-989-9226. Paul and I will be right back. Should we lighten up the talk a little bit? Chatter a little bit?
Should we? I don't know.
You don't want to?
This listener says, more police, more body cameras, more police training is not addressing the problem. It's simply an attempt at better controlling and managing the symptoms. I don't know. How do you get to the real problem? I don't know.
And it's, CJ writes, you know, as your guest suggested, abolish the police, but only in the area where they abolish. See how that works out. I don't know that I fully understand the theory behind abolishing the police. I want police in my neighborhood.
Wouldn't that result in anarchy?
But there must be a reason that they, you know, I guess they say they don't feel safe.
Well,
you know, having no police would make them feel safer than.
Or do they want to police themselves in specific neighborhoods?
Next time we have her on, we'll ask.
Yeah,
she said it was another organization that's trying to do that. It was called like Minneapolis 150 or something. So maybe we'll reach out to them and find out the theory behind that.
Yeah, lighten things up, please.
Lighten things up a little bit. Here, let's talk about guns. Yeah, that'll lighten it up. Well, it'll be actually a very quick story. After finding a gun in a sofa at IKEA, some children fired the loaded weapon inside the store, prompting an investigation. Thank goodness, nobody was hurt. But apparently earlier that day, a customer at the Fisher's Indiana store sat down on the couch to test it out.
Ugh.
And he didn't realize, says a police officer, that the gun had fallen out of his holster, person, pocket, wherever he had it. The child found the gun after he resumed shopping and subsequently fired the gun. The 6-year-old boy who fired the gun was not hurt. Police say this is even more important to stress. If you are wearing a gun, wear it responsibly. Could you imagine?
No, I can't.
Could you imagine?
And most people I know who have a conceal and carry are pretty judicious.
It's crazy.
About not doing that very thing.
Thank God nobody was hurt. That is just a freak thing, but that is a crazy story. Thank God no one's hurt.
IKEA, huh?
IKEA, not their fault.
But that was pretty exciting, though.
They have comfy, cozy couches and chairs. Not their fault, but keep your gun on your person. It's 5:30. Let's take a break, because when we get back, we're going to have Representative Keith Ellison on. We'll hear reaction from today's travel ban and a whole lot more in a moment.
Radio.com.
Jordana and Paul back with you. Thanks for tuning in. If you didn't hear the news, a very sharply divided Supreme Court voted 5-4 earlier today to uphold President Trump's ban on travel from several mostly Muslim countries, rejecting a challenge that it discriminated against Muslims or exceeded its authority. Question comes up, is this an attempt to secure America's borders and make all of us safer? Or is this, in fact, a thinly veiled ban on Muslims? With us to discuss this is Congressman Keith Ellison. Keith, thank you for joining George and me today. We really appreciate your time, sir.
Yeah, well, I'm happy to join you. So thank you. Thank you for having me on.
And how would you answer that? Is this a ban?
I would say, yeah, because if you look at what the president said he wants a total and complete shutdown of Muslim entry to the country. That is what he said. And he reiterated that sentiment on numerous occasions. So, you know, in the United States, you can't take someone's religion, their national origin, their race into consideration when you make a decision about, you know, really anything. You know, those things are not legitimate criteria. You can consider whether somebody is a safety risk, or you can consider these things, but you can't just say no Muslims, no Asians, you can't do that. And so, in my view, Trump was very clear about what he wanted to achieve, and he has been severely limited in what he wanted to do, because he did block 5 countries because of their population's majority of their faith, and he was able to achieve that. So that's unfortunate. And so I don't support this particular decision. What the Supreme Court said is that it was within his authority to do, even if some of these very negative, bigoted things were part of his consideration, that if you look at the writing of the document, it didn't mention that. So they just said it's within his ability to do.
Under the pretext of national security, right?
Right. That was exact. That is the thing he used. But by the way, I will also say that it was under the rubric of national security that the Supreme Court said that it would be lawful to take American citizens of Japanese ancestry and lock them in an internment camp.
So, Keith, it's Jordana, by the way. Thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it. How would you respond to critics that say, you know, there are about 50 Muslim majority countries in the world? Only 7 are on this ban, and there are some that aren't necessarily, I guess, Muslim. North Korea, correct? Right. So,
good question. There's really no North Korean, immigration, because those folks from North Korea, if they make it to South Korea, then they can come through there. Mm-hmm. So that's really kind of a red herring. And when you talk about Venezuela, only the elites of Venezuela are banned and not the majority of the population. So it really is selecting out, you know, these countries based on their population. But your question remains, you know, well, it's still, there are other Muslim countries where people can immigrate. Mm-hmm. But yet the countries are selected out because of their population, because they're Muslim majority countries. And although other countries where, you know, Trump has, you know, a lot of close ties, including business ties, places like the UAE and Saudi Arabia, where, no, he didn't ban them. These countries are selected out because they're Muslim majority countries. And again, let's believe Trump. He's the one who said it. I didn't make this stuff up. He came up with it.
It was a very divided decision. You know, I was mm-hmm. reading, Sonia Sotomayor and Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I was reading the dissent, and they are more aligned with you, saying that this is, you know, this is a problem of religion. This is not necessarily, and they even cite his own website, which until March of 2017, when he was president of the United States, the wording on the ban was about Muslims and keeping Muslims out. It has since been taken down, but it was there even when he was president. So, you know, again, we need to remember that it was a close decision. It wasn't, this is the right thing and we're going to do it. This was a divided decision.
Well, yeah, it's true. And let's also remember that the Supreme Court has done great things to advance human, equality, too. I mean, the Brown versus Board of Education decision, and there have been others. But this, to me, is reminiscent of some of the worst decisions that we've seen. Quite frankly, I think this decision will be remembered as a low point in the Supreme Court's history.
Congressman, over the weekend, another shooting. Mr. Blevins was shot Saturday night. What is your reaction to that? And our local police, local officials taking the steps that they should be taking at this point to figure out what really happened?
Well, let me tell you, I'm urging the BCA, the city, all authorities to have an expeditious, transparent investigation that has neutrality. And that's what we really need, because we have to have citizens have as much information as they can. I know that I would counsel not to just release the tape without interviewing all the witnesses. But as soon as they are interviewed, I think it's important to disclose that tape, which the police officers should have had running while the incident was unfolding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are hoping to see that sooner than later.
Yeah, I think so, because, you know, look, there are people who gave some eyewitness accounts, but then video is also very useful in trying to figure out what actually happened. I can tell you this. We've got a problem when it comes to trust. We've got a problem when it comes to confidence, and we need to work hard to restore it. And that is why we've got to have this expeditious investigation. We've got to be transparent. We've got to release information. So that would be my counsel on this thing. And I've been watching this kind of thing unfold for many years now. And I could tell you that, that it doesn't help if the investigation just goes on and people really don't ever find out what happened. And because you do have conflicting points of view that were shared by witnesses on the scene.
You know, when something like this happens, Keith, it really does divide your constituency. I mean, the whole state of Minnesota. We just had a leader from Black Lives Matter on, you know, saying some of the solutions to this problem that other organizations bring up are, you know, disbanding the police force. That's it. You know, we don't want any police force. And then you get people who text in and say, stop waving guns around so then you don't get shot. I mean, it's almost like politics in this way. It's so divided and it gets a little nasty. Do you have a message to the constituency?
My message is, look, for anybody who's been the victim of domestic violence, we need the police department. You know, for anybody, I mean, I think that's a point of view that doesn't look at all the thing people who need to call on law enforcement services. At the same time, you know, we've got to get folks who work in law enforcement to really kind of embrace the fact that the level of trust is low, and that there's going to have to be reform on there's that side as well. We need to have implicit bias training in the police. We've got to have de-escalation of force. We've got to find out how to prevent a negative event from happening as opposed to rolling in there really tough and then, you know, provoking the reaction that wasn't necessarily, you know, necessary. And so this situation is longstanding. It's national. It's not just Minnesota. It's an all over the country problem. And we just got to face that this is, in fact, a problem. And, you know, when you and if you just act like, well, it's the other guy, you never get to the real question, which is how do we give professional, effective law enforcement services, which every community is entitled to. And part of professional law enforcement services is that law enforcement is viewed as a help, not a hindrance. And I think that for the officers who go out there every day to do the best they can for people, it is particularly important, you know, to build that trust. You can't solve crimes without trust in the community. You can't, you know, you get all these judgments for excessive force, you know, that cities have to pay out. I mean, this is not a cost-free thing. You know, there are costs and there are real damages associated with not addressing this issue squarely in the face. So that's my take.
Congressman Ellison, would you agree that the priority for any president, whether it was President Obama or now President Trump, is to keep Americans safe or try to keep them safer? One of our listeners writes, and I'm trying to figure this out, if there's any truth to this, that these countries specifically were selected because they don't have sophisticated screening techniques or stable government organizations. Any truth to that or not?
Well, look, of course there might be some truth to that, but does that mean that nobody from those countries? I mean, look, surely there are people in Yemen and Somalia and Iran who can pass muster. To say that no one from these countries can come and all of them are ineligible based simply on their religion and national identity, I just think is not, can't possibly be correct, right?
But can't waivers? People can still get waivers, right? They can qualify for.
They can, but let me tell you, that program has not yielded very many waivers at all. There's essentially, I mean, I'm not saying there haven't been any waivers, but the truth is that the program's not really working. And as I talk to people who operate with the system, they said, look, essentially, you know, nobody's coming. And look, you know, we live in Minnesota. We have all kinds of Somali neighbors. We have council members who are Somali, Abdi Warsami. We have school board members. We have business owners. We have folks who are in all types of life leading very constructive, productive lives. We've just said their relatives can't come here, no matter who they meet, maybe a 5-year-old girl, an 85-year-old man. We've said because they're coming from Somalia, they can't come. And yet we know as Minnesotans that we have a lot of folks in Somalia, from Somalia, who've contributed to life in Minnesota. And so I just think that the blanket ruling with very, very, very few exceptions made with the waiver program is just overbroad. And then let me just also say, you know, this thing started a certain kind of way. We can't just ignore the fact that it was the president who said he wanted a complete and total shutdown of Muslim entry. That's how this thing all got started. If he would have started out saying, I'm only concerned about public safety, and that's my only consideration, we might be in a very different place. But that's not how we started. And so we can't ignore the intent and purpose that animates this Muslim ban.
Good perspective. I'm glad you brought that up. I think that does give us a little pause. Representative Keith Ellison, Congressman Keith Ellison, we thank you so much for the time. And
thank
it was
you.
Great to see you, by the way, at the JCRC event. I saw Keith at
the... Oh, yeah, it was great to be there. Community. Had a great time.
And then, at that event, you know, we had Muslims and Jews and Palestinians and Somalis. Everybody came together. But that's how it should be.
Wow.
We should have more events like that.
I agree. I absolutely agree with that.
Thank you,
have
Congressman. You too, sir.
You too. Good to chat with him. Lots of folks were there. Ilhan Omar was there. It was a Jewish event. We had all sorts of people there. And we had a Palestinian and an Israeli up on stage talking about how to solve that problem in the West Bank and in Gaza. It was one of those events that gave you hope that, you know, people can, from very different viewpoints, can find some common ground.
And right now, we can't get enough hope.
Need some common ground.
That's good. That's good to hear. Sure, it's 5:50. That's Wicks and Jewelers time. The best place to buy a watch is also the best place to sell your watch. Get the best price for your pre-owned Rolex at Wicks and Jewelers in Bloomington.
Thank you for spending some time with Paul and me today. Appreciate your energy with us. Tomorrow we're going to talk about a possible decision on the Enbridge oil pipeline up north.
That's right. And a couple of sizzling days coming up. But this is going to be a real summer. I think we might get 25 days above 90. Average is 13. So this is the summer you were praying for.
Yeah.
Or not. Catch you tomorrow.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s?
It's better over here.
Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.